right. Thank you all for being patient. Just as we have more people joining, let us know that you can still hear us as we start this presentation. But for now, I'm going to dive right in into the session and start. Catherine, if you can go to the next slide. So today, if you're joining the webinar, that means you're interested in opportunities to go overseas through the International Education Ministers Program. So this is an overview of this session, but also a walk through the application system. So you'll get a nice deep dive into our application and any components you may face or have issues with in the system. Obviously, our team is here to help you if you have any questions, but we just want to make this a resource for you as you move forward with your applications. My name is Sarah Cosner. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist on the program. If any of you have questions as you're trying to apply for the program, I will be the person that you'll be working with via email or on the phone. But today I'm happy to be joined by my colleague, Catherine Motto. Catherine, would you like to quickly introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I won't repeat my name. It's Friday, so anything could happen. I'm the application and selection lead here on the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. That means that I'm largely responsible for the application itself, which is where we'll be diving into the application walkthrough here in a little bit. And selection means I also am responsible for the peer review and selection process. So thank you all for joining us today.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Catherine. Additionally, this session is being recorded. We will have it online, so if you need to access it later, we will have it there as well. I am getting some feedback that some people are having issues being able to hear, so we will follow up with you in the chat if you can't hear, but if anyone else is having issues, please let us know. And with that, we will move on. There we go. So right now what I'm going to dive into was pretty much had a very big dive last month on the overview of the IEA. So if you do want a more in-depth session, feel free to set up an appointment with me, or we can set up, I can share the recording from last month with you. But as a quick overview, the IEA opportunities, which are International Education Administrator Seminars, take place in 7 different countries. One note that we have an adjustment from last month is, unfortunately, Japan is no longer recruiting for the 21-22 cycle, but the rest of the 6 other countries will be recruiting. So if you were interested in Japan, I'd encourage you to look at one of our other countries or just wait till next year when we do have that option available. So with this, these seminars actually take place over the course of 2 weeks, except for the case of France, which is a week and a half. And each country is actually looking for a very unique profile. With those profiles, we will have future webinars ahead of each program's deadline that really dives into what that country is looking for, particularly. If you do have questions or if you want me to review your resume or background to see which country you might be a better fit for, I can also offer that opportunity as well. So with these IEA seminars, they're intended to have a broad personal and professional impact on grantees. And from these experiences, your home campus will benefit from the increased knowledge of that host country's higher education system. These opportunities help aid in the development of programs, international student advising, and broader global collaboration. Additionally, grantees will broaden their networks with possible partnerships and cooperation through the other Fulbright IEA grantees that you're on that grant with. It's really important, and we dove into this in that last webinar, to stress, in addition to the benefits that this has for you as an applicant, but the additional benefits and how you should really frame your application within the context of the benefits to your institution. So again, think of this not as just a personal application, but a broader one that aims to increase your personal institution's internationalization efforts. So on the slide, you can see the overview of the timelines and when you'll be notified. This is on our website as well, but if you have any questions, we can dive into that a little bit later. Catherine, next slide. And before I pass the reins over to Catherine, I think I just have one other slide after this, but we just want to touch on the eligibility of the program. So in order to be eligible to apply, you must be a U.S. citizen, Unlike some other programs, a PhD or term one degree is not required for this at all. But do keep in mind that you have appropriate professional experience and accomplishments. So each award does look for 3 years to 5 years of experience within a particular role or background. So just make sure as you look on those catalog of award pages that you do match what that award is looking for. Again, this session isn't going into what each program is looking for, but more so that application walkthrough. But I can help anyone if you do have questions about the varying award requirements that you will see online. Lastly, what I want to point out is that directors of English language programs and instructors of those programs are not eligible to apply for the Korea Award. That's also for Japan, but since Japan's not being offered this year, we're kind of glossing over that for now. And then lastly, the question that we always get is, these grants are all conducted in English, so you do not need to have the host language requirement for any of these awards. And then the next slide is the last one that I will be discussing real quick before I pass the reins over. So as you're preparing your application, Catherine will show each of these sections as she goes through that walkthrough, but these are the components that are required by you to upload within your application form online. The second bullet point talks about seminar details. This is different from years past where you used to have to craft a personal statement. So moving forward, you have 5 open-ended questions. They range on the topics of professional biography, country selection and professional relevance, outcomes and impact, personal qualities, and there is a section for additional information should you choose to provide anything else towards the review panel that they need to know regarding your interest and background. These questions are your opportunity to explain your specific strengths as a candidate to the reviewers and the potential hosts overseas, and it must be clear and compelling to the audience both inside and outside your field, so keep that in mind as you are crafting these seminar details. The CV or resume, you have up to 6 pages. That's not changed from years past. It should be clearly organized and tailored to show your credentials and professional standing, as well as accomplishments within the field of international education. Additionally, it should include your employment history, listing items chronologically, starting with the most recent. The institutional statement, there is a slight change here from last year. Every country now requires this institutional statement. With this, it is 1 to 2 pages, and it allows you to address some following statements within it, and these are listed online. It should talk about your general information of your home institution, what type of institution is it, are you an HSI or an HBCU institution, are you a community college, so on and so forth. It should talk about your total enrollment numbers, numbers of degrees offered. Additionally, you can use this to speak to the number of international students on campus and where they're coming from countrywide. If you are applying to the IA to Korea, you do need to list the number of Korean students currently on your campus, so just keep that in mind. In terms of other components to address, it could be the study abroad opportunities available on your campus, any prior institutional partnerships, especially in the country that you're applying to, and lastly, any future goals or plans for internationalizing the campus. Additional tips that we like to point out here are to, when you are getting those letters of reference, make sure to provide answers to these the seminar details and the institutional statement to your letter writers so they can start to develop those references for you. The last thing I'll point out on the references is you are only required to upload 2 letters of recommendation. So that's the other change that we have at the moment. It used to be 3, but moving forward, you only need to do 2. And they can come from a variety of people, both on and off your campus. Keep in mind that 1 letter should come from your current supervisor or someone that you report to at your institution. They should be familiar with your administrative skills and leadership success, whereas the other letter can come from any colleague who can speak to your personal attributes and interests within international education. And with that second letter of recommendation, that can be anyone from your campus or from another institution. So if anyone does have questions about these, just let me know. And again, we do have that more in-depth session, but we'll touch on all of these components within each individual webinar. And we do have a slide at the very end that talks about upcoming webinars and dates. But with that, I will pass the reins back over to Catherine.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. I'm happy to point out some of the resources that we have on our website. We've talked a little bit about the catalog of awards. You've heard about that, and I'll show you a little bit very briefly about that as we navigate to the application. We also have our application guidelines online. So if you heard a lot of what Sarah was saying and you're thinking, I am not going to remember this in 10 minutes, don't worry. It's all written down for you, and we have it all easily accessible on our website. She's also mentioned that there's been lots of other webinars, and we'll have more to come. We have our Fulbright Scholar blog, and we've had some IEA alumni participate in that. And there's also my Fulbright. So without further ado, I am going to navigate to the application. And hopefully, where are we? Application. Okay, so I already have the application open because I am here on our website already. So what I did is I'm going to show you how to navigate to the application from the awards catalog. So you can search on either search all awards or browse all awards. Doesn't really matter. They both really do the same thing. What I would do is click on activity. And then click on seminars, search awards, and then you can see all of the different IEA awards. And you can list them. There's not really much difference in terms of these because they're so similar in terms of the activity and that kind of thing. But if you wanted to see what that looks like, that's what it looks like. So I'll pull up the Fulbright Nehru one in India. I'll open that in a new tab. And you can see what this looks like. So this is where we are talking about the details. It talks about the timing, the award requirements. I really want to highlight the profile here. I know Sarah had mentioned this as well, that the profile is really important because there are a lot of nuanced differences between the different seminars in terms of that audience, in terms of who would be desired and qualified for each award. So from here, you can click on Begin Application Process, and that will take you to our website. And then click on Application, and that will send you over here to create an application. Now, I've already created an application, so you'll have to create an account if you don't have one already, if you haven't applied previously. You'll want to use an email account that you check regularly and that you'll be able to access throughout the next year. That email address is the one that we'll use for system-generated emails, updates, and that also means that we'll use that one to send you notifications about your application status. We want to note that once you enter your basic information, you'll get an email with a PIN. You'll use that to basically confirm your account information, and then you'll be able to start your application. So here you can see I've already started an account, and I've logged in, so I'll be able to get started here in just a sec. I do want to share a few tips before you really get started. We sometimes are asked, what browser should you use? We encourage you to use Google Chrome, which is not what I'm using today, so maybe don't follow my lead. We'll see. But the application should work on all modern browsers. So you can work on it over a number of days. Your entries should automatically save as you proceed through it, but there is a timeout feature. So if you're working on it, something in a text box, you may want to work on that offline and then copy something in if it's a longer text box, and we'll get to that soon. Regardless of what browser you use, though, we want to make sure that you don't open the application in multiple tabs. That can wreak havoc on your applications, so just make sure if you're like me and you have 75 different tabs open, you only have the application open in one of them to make sure everything stays as it should and intact in your application. Hopefully it'll be fairly intuitive to use. We do want to remind you to read the instructions and the questions carefully. The application also contains fields that you're required to complete. We've tried to identify those with an asterisk. If they're not completed, you'll be reminded to complete them before submitting the application. There are also text boxes where you'll need to be mindful of character limits. And for any document uploads like that CV and institutional statement, you'll want to be mindful of the page limits and other formatting and content guidelines. You'll also find in some of the text boxes character limits. Now, these include letters, numbers, punctuation, and spaces. If you're entering a list, we also suggest removing paragraph spaces where possible. Okay, so let's start a new application. We'll create a new application. That was last year's application. Okay, so welcome. We ask that you read everything that's on this page, a lot of which I've already said. I understand that there's a 60-minute inactivity timeout, so just be mindful of that. As you click continue at the bottom of the page, it'll automatically save what you had entered on the prior page. So this page has information about the deadlines and all of this useful pieces. And then when you've read all of that, you can continue on to the preliminary questions. Now, these help to determine whether or not you're eligible and which program you're applying to. So if you receive a red message, so if I said, no, I'm not a U.S. citizen, then I wouldn't be able to proceed further in the application because U.S. citizenship, as Sarah mentioned, is a requirement for the program. So we will say yes, and if you had dual citizenship, that's fine. You would list those that country or countries here. So you'll also click on Fulbright IEA for the program. And then for the top one, I skipped that one, so you can skip around and it will be okay. So for the first one, have you completed or undertaken a grant in the past 2 years? I have not. Okay, we continue on. And then all of a sudden on this left-hand side, a whole bunch more pages will pop up. So let's see, we were going to select the program in India for our application. So we select the country and then we select the award. There aren't any other options for this, so I'll go ahead and hit save and then move on. You can see that more information about the award details has been provided here, and we will continue on. Now, you don't have to go in this exact order with continuing on to every single page. You can jump to a future page if you want. That's fine. We totally recognize that you may well do that. So now let's say as I'm working on this, I change my mind and in fact, I actually want to apply to Taiwan. So I would go back to this country and award page. I would select the country, click on Taiwan, and then select the award, save, and continue. And it's as easy as that to change that. So for personal information, this is collecting information about you. This should be fairly self-explanatory. So I had, started to complete some of this information in the application. Leave this, continue on. A lot of it is going to be fairly intuitive, especially in these early pages. So this is your permanent address. If you switch the country to, say, the United States, and then enter your address, it'll have the city and state that you'll then select. Wishful thinking here to be in Hawaii right now. Mailing address. So if you aren't living at your current mailing address, it gives you the opportunity to enter your current mailing address. So you can see where this had said no, and then it had dates where you can enter the dates that you'll be at that mailing address. Enter your phone numbers and alternate or secondary email address. So this would be a really great backup email address just in case your primary email address, if an email doesn't want to go through there. Here you would enter your emergency contact information. Okay, so continuing on to our academic and professional information. This is where you'll enter information about your employment, your academic degrees, experience abroad, and prior Fulbrights, etc. So the title list is long. It used to be a lot longer, so please take a minute and just go through and see to find the best fit, and then enter the date that you started in that role, and then you can enter your school name. And you can see, actually, hopefully you can see on the screen that it is automatically filling in as I was typing. So maybe there's not a school, but there's a department. So Department of International, let's say, Study Abroad Programs. Okay, and then you enter the street and the state. Let's see, I think that is in Indiana. Please don't mind me if I don't have the right city and state for that. And then indicate what your role is. So in this case, I might be a professional employed by a college or university. This is where you would upload a document, and we'll upload a CV. So I just navigated to that and then uploaded it. And then you can see that it's been uploaded, and you can even preview it. Okay, employment eligibility, I'm going to keep on kind of going through here. It should be fairly clear. Okay, so, whoops. Sometimes that happens too. You hit escape by accident. And okay, so then you enter that information. Still here, just working through this for you. Okay, save. I won't go through adding a lot of other degrees, just so you can see what that looks like. Accomplishments, this is where you would enter, this is a text box in here. Question came up, if someone is in candidacy status, how would that be listed? That's a great question. So here you could say date degree received, and then if it's in progress, you'll list the expected date of conferral for that date degree received. And then if you need to further convey the status, you can put that in your CV. That would be great to include there. Okay, experience abroad. So if you've resided abroad, if you've had a prior Fulbright before, if you had said yes to experience abroad, then you would enter that information there. If you had said yes to a prior Fulbright, you would enter that information there and then add a justification if it was a scholar grant previously. Oh, Sarah, this is a great question. Are Fulbright liaisons eligible to apply for the IEA seminar?
That is a good question. Yes, they are definitely eligible to apply. If we have anyone who is on the call who is a Fulbright program advisor for the student program, you too are also eligible to apply.
Yay! Awesome. Okay, so next up, I moved on to the award details page, and this is where you enter. It says academic discipline, but for the IEA program, it's typically going to be education and then international education, so it's really the focus of the project. So you can see that this is a bit of a long list, and I'll scroll down to education and select international education, near to dear to so many of our hearts. I will select grant activity, and then this is where you would upload your institutional statement. So you can upload that. I happen to have a test copy handy. Okay, and then if you're willing to be considered for other countries, you can enter that here. But bear in mind, for the IA program, this is a really, really, really frequently, if ever, used option for this program. I want to highlight with this also that for the IA seminar, you can only apply for one per year. So if you think of the year as being like the full competition cycle, starting with India has the first deadline all the way through France and Germany with the latest deadlines in February, you would need to choose one of those, and you couldn't like try for India and then later on try for Japan or Korea rather, and then try for Germany. You'd have to pick one of those and see how everything goes. So that's where you know, you want to pay attention to those award descriptions and the qualifications and everything to see which is going to be the best fit. Again, it could be that more than one is a good fit, but depending, it may be that one is like a really good fit for your expertise and your background. Okay, so seminar details, candidate profile and objectives, these are the same thing. So this is what this page is. It says seminar details over on the left on the menu. It says candidate profile objectives at the top of the page. It's the same page, don't worry. And this is new this year. So previously we had the statement of intent and we have replaced it with these text boxes. You can also find the prompts for this section under on the IEA page on our website under the application tab and then under seminar details. So don't feel like you need to be capturing all this information right now. It is available, so you can start working on that well in advance and see what the questions look like as well as the character limits on these. So I know Sarah had mentioned these and described what they were asking, and you'll be able to read more on the website about the specific questions. So moving on to the next page, that takes us to the recommendations and foreign language evaluators. And foreign language evaluation, as Sarah mentioned, all of the seminars are conducted in English, so you can completely ignore that part. But don't forget about the recommendations. You still need to have two recommendations. They just happen to get added up on or registered on the same page. So what you'll do is you'll click on Add Recommender Evaluator. You'll choose Letter of Recommendation. You'll enter their information. I'm going to use Sarah as an example. So she can see what that looks like. And let's see. Sarah, I'm going to make up your phone number. Don't worry. And then you can add a brief message to say, you know, dear Sarah, this is for the application for the IA seminar. We had discussed recently as part of my professional development. Obviously, you can write your own message. And obviously, you wouldn't use Sarah as a reference. This is just an example so you can see what this looks like. I know it was super great of Sarah to recommend me. And Sarah, I hope you're okay with this. It's something that, you know, you know, staff, both of us answer questions from applicants about who should we have as a recommender. And we do have some guidance about this on our website. And we also do recommend that you ask your recommender or give them a heads up before you register them here for it. Not only so they can look out for the email, but also, you know, I think it's just probably usually a good idea to give them a heads up, especially since oftentimes it's a supervisor. And so you would...
I promise a glowing recommendation.
What's that?
I promise a glowing recommendation.
Oh, thanks. Okay, so you need to, I've only done one, obviously, there. So you'll see what that looks like on the review page. There's a data privacy and request for consent page that you'll want to take a look at. We do consider your data and handle it with utmost care with respect for your privacy. So I do want to highlight that on to the signature page, where you'll read this whole paragraph that certifies that you have entered everything in the application accurately and completely and as correctly as possible. So you would type in your name. Now I'm Jane, I'm not Jane Smith. Yep, let me do that. Aha. Okay, so then you confirm, and then you can go on to the review page. Now, you know that I skipped a whole lot of questions in here, so this is where it's popping up to say, hey, you're missing information here, like a whole lot of it. So you'll want to go back to that page, so missing seminar details. So I click on that page, and then I enter my response here, and it's not going, I mean, there's a spell check in your browser usually, so you can, you know, check that, but honestly, we do recommend drafting this in Word, for example, to, you know, check your character limit. It is not a humongous text box, we realize, so it may also just be easier to write and review in Word, and then you can copy it in here. Just be super careful when you do copy it that you double check that the version that is all copied here doesn't cut off at some point. So if by chance you were looking at the word count and not the character count, it's going to cut off. So just make sure to scroll through the entire window here to make sure it ends where it's supposed to end. So we go back over to that review page, and, you know, ideally everything would be submitted because it's not going to let me submit the application here, so hopefully everything is all corrected by the time I'm going to submit. And then I'll, this instead of save for later would change to being able to submit the application. So you just want to make sure to click that submit button. The application won't be considered if it hasn't actually been submitted. As I mentioned, you can walk through each of the pages, you can jump around them and work on them in bits and pieces. You want to keep an eye on that recommendation section. You saw how easy it was to register your recommenders, so they'll get an email to submit their letter. They can submit their letter before you submit your application. They can submit it, like if you submit your application before the deadline, they can still submit it in the days leading up to the deadline. We just need to have those two recommendations by the deadline in order for your application to be able to go through the next part of the review process. So let's see, I'm looking to see if we have any questions. Sarah, have we gotten any other questions about the application itself?
Not on the application itself, a few that I'll just address at the end for clarification.
Okay, that sounds good. When you submit, you should receive an email from the application saying it's been submitted. I think you also receive emails from the system letting you know when your recommendations have been submitted. But just so you know, when you log back in after you have submitted your application, so this is an example from last year. Let's see if this works. Okay, so here's my application checklist. It's saying that I'm still missing a recommendation, and then you would be able to see the status and take care of other information. If you needed to change your address, that kind of thing. So hopefully this will be fairly easy to use for you. Again, if you have any questions, Sarah is happy to help with that. She may flag them to me if she can't figure them out, and that's fine. It's we're happy to help to help you to get your application submitted. So let me switch back over to the PowerPoint really quick. Before we talk about upcoming webinars, I did want to highlight a little bit more about the review process, because you may be curious to know what happens after you submit your application. Well, first step is, did you follow the instructions? So your application will initially be reviewed by Sarah and myself and other colleagues at IIE as kind of like a quick preliminary check to make sure that everything is there, to make sure that the qualifications are met for the award, to make sure that the institutional statement and the CV are all set and that kind of thing. So we'll initially do that. Once that's all set and the application is complete and ready, it'll move on to a peer review panel. of International Education Administrators. And in this process, applicants are either recommended or not recommended for further consideration, and they're notified of this outcome. So for applications that were recommended following this peer review process, the next stage is multi-pronged. There's an in-country review, a review by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, and by the U.S. Department of State. And we have to have all three of those decisions before we can notify applicants of the final outcome, that is, whether or not they've been selected for a grant or named an alternate. So for applications that were not recommended in peer review, that's where their application stops being reviewed. They're notified of that, and then their application does not move forward in the process, and it would not be considered by other countries. So you might be wondering what criteria are used to evaluate applications in this process, and we do have this outlined on our website, so actually I can flip back over to that, go back over to the IEA seminars and onto the review criteria tab. So you can see what criteria the reviewers are considering, as well as, you know, what goes into your application. So that may help you to prepare your application. Ultimately, those reviewing your application expect you to demonstrate that you're qualified and able to participate effectively in the seminar, and that your rationale for applying to the particular country is sound and supported by your institution, that it'll have broad and sustainable impact there, and that you're adaptable and culturally sensitive. You also need to show that you've done your homework to prepare for the seminar. So you'll also want to remember that your application will be read by peers from institutions across the U.S. and those in the host country. So it needs to be clear and concise, like Sarah was saying, and compelling, preemptively answering any questions that they might have. Those reading your application might not be familiar with your institution to understand the specific context of some aspect of it that you may take for granted, right? That's just a natural part of your institution. So you really want to make sure that you're connecting all of those dots for those reading your application, rather than potentially leaving them to come to their own conclusion, which might not be the one that you intended. Right, so we recommend that having someone read those responses to the seminar details questions before submitting could be really helpful. Alumni have often reported that having peers read those responses would be, or the prior personal statement was really helpful beforehand. Let's see. Okay, so upcoming webinars. Sarah, we have more webinars coming up. We have one on India. That is the first one coming up because that's the first application deadline coming up. Then for Taiwan, then for Korea, Germany, and France. So we have some great programs and seminars coming up. Is there anything else in the way of webinars that you wanted to mention?
No, the only thing I'd say is they're all listed on the website, so register as soon as you're interested. And like this session, they will be recorded, and if you are registered but you don't attend, as soon as that webinar is archived with that recording, you'll get an email. So I always encourage you to register for as many as you're interested in.
Sounds good. So I wonder if we have any other questions. Is there anything you wanted to add before we open it up to questions?
No, I think this was a great walkthrough. I really appreciate always being on a session with you, Catherine, so thank you.
Likewise.
Perfect. The other thing that I'll reiterate that you mentioned is in a cycle, which we're currently recruiting for 21-22, you can only apply for one. I know you didn't mention that, but I know that question does come up. One, as people are thinking about submitting questions to the chat box, I encourage you to do so now. One great question did come up, and I hear this every year, is can more than one employee from a department or an institution apply in a cycle? And the answer is yes. The pro tip that I will say, and I'll see if Catherine agrees, is we would just encourage you to think about choosing different countries, therefore you're not competing with each other at your institution. I don't know if Catherine has other advice on that.
I think that's a good thing, you know, something to think about, not only with your institution's goals and strategy with any given country, but also, like, if one person, I think it's fine for multiple people to apply in the same year. I think if any are successful and then someone applies, someone else applies in a future year, the more an institution participates in this program, I think the institution hopefully will really start to reap the benefits of that. So as one person participates, okay, so what has the institution gotten, you know, how is the, what has the impact been from that? Okay, so if a second person goes to maybe a different country, what would be the additional impact on the institution for that participation? Hopefully that makes sense, but that's something that I've heard in our peer review discussions that they say, this institution, it looks like they've had, based on, something else in the application, they've had, more than one person from their institution participate in an IEA. That's amazing. And I wonder, how they're, broadly reaping the benefits of that.
We do have a question on country and seminar competitiveness, which we obviously don't share numbers of applicants and to recipient ratios. But I will say this, what I can say here is this really just depends on the background that they're looking for. You have awards like Germany that have a very broad opening, so they tend to be a little more popular. And then you might have countries like France who has a very narrow kind of field of who they're looking for, so that might have yield a different kind of application pool and number set. Do you have anything that you'd want to add to that, Catherine?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, and we see this on both sides of the program, both with the IEA program and with the Scholar Program for Teaching and Research, and it's something that I think fit makes such a big difference with this that I wouldn't say it's so much about competitiveness because, people are receiving grants. It's like winning the lottery. Someone is going to win the lottery. They have to, everyone has to buy a ticket if they want a chance to win, right? So you have to apply to have a chance to be selected. The key is to look at the award and say, is this really a good fit for me? Is this really a good fit for my institution? And I think that that tends to be helpful in terms of narrowing which award or which awards might be a good fit. And I think I'll, put Sarah out there to say that she can help advise on that too.
Yes, my email is listed on this screen, iea@iie.org. If you want to send me your resume, you want me to follow up with a particular country to see if your background is of interest to them, I can do that. I'm here to assist as you need it. So thank you, Catherine.
The other thing, so taking Sarah off of the hot seat, alumni of the program can be really helpful too. And so we have a Fulbright directory of alumni on our website. Now, we don't have contact information, but I assure you, you could Google any of these alumni faster than I can explain all of this because, the majority of them are at universities. So being able to, ask someone, and I imagine we could probably give some recommendations for any country, because it can be an overwhelming list. Certainly reaching out to your peers about their experience, both in applying and on the seminar itself, can be very helpful in figuring out which one might be a good fit.
And I'm glad you brought that up. For each of those upcoming webinars that are on a country-specific award, so for India, for Taiwan, for Korea, so on and so forth, we will have at least one, if not two, alumni present. And typically, you are welcome to follow up with them afterwards if you have additional questions. So there will be. Yep, exactly. Past participants will be on those webinars. This next question, Catherine, I actually want your take, having sat in the review process a bit more. But what do you, I know, get ready. What do you tend to see as the ratio between faculty/professors to the higher education ministers within these groups?
It's a good question. I think because the program is really focusing on education administrators, and many of the awards are further focusing on those who have that significant role in internationalization on their campus, I think that the majority of participants are administrators. I think it depends, obviously, on the college or university in terms of how that role actually functions. We realize that sometimes, faculty are also administrators in many cases, and I think explaining that really clearly, and even on your CV, like highlighting where, you know, what are the admin pieces of the role, just to make it really easy for us and for our, you know, reviewers here and in the host country if the application is recommended, to easily see, you know, how your background and role, your current role, fit in with this seminar. That I think if you're really solely and a faculty member and maybe a dean or department, you know, maybe not so much dean because the deans are very much have an administrative role. But if you're, say, a department chair, it is an administrative role, but not quite in the same way that many of our international administrators would see that. So I think, again, like connecting the dots for the reviewers to make it clear how you came to this seminar and what the impact is going to be.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And the only thing I would add, which I tend to advise, is if you do happen to wear both of those faculty as well as admin hats, maybe within your international studies department, something like that, try and make sure that it's at least 50%, if not more, of an admin role to really highlight that. But what Catherine said is very key, is to really highlight on your CV, in your application, that admin component to set it apart.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, many faculty are very involved in, you know, faculty-led programs and, you know, other programs that benefit students, and that there's a big role with that. But I think that you know, to really keep in mind the mission of the program and how it will benefit the broad focus, the broader mission of the IA seminar and the institution. So it looks like we got a question from someone who, not clear if they're more interested in the IA or the teaching and research program, about Flex. The seminar is typically a two-week program, so there would not be any way to have Flex as part of that. Flex would allow someone applying for teaching or research or a combination to split their grant across 1 or 2 years. So the seminars are definitely not eligible for Flex. They are set dates. Don't worry. You wouldn't be the first to ask. So the seminar is for set dates for the participants. And actually, that brings up a good point for those listening, that the seminars are really designed for the broader interests of the participants. So I don't know of any of them that are able to really customize the seminar for any particular interests. I do highly recommend joining our future webinars to hear more from alumni on that, but occasionally we'll get questions saying, oh, can it be customized because I need a whole lot of meetings with people at medical schools, and that may not be possible necessarily because the whole seminar is being designed for a group of participants.
Perfect. And if anyone has any last-minute questions, I'm just going to quickly address one more and see if Catherine has a take. But we did get a question regarding COVID, which we know is a hot topic right now. But Catherine, do you have any kind of broad strokes you can advise regarding program cancellations and if there's deferrals within this?
That's a good question. I think it's very country specific and timing specific, right? Because for the application that folks are looking at applying to right now, I mean, the earliest of those seminars would be next March and April with the Taiwan and India programs. And I think many of us, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty as to what things are going to look like next March. And next April in the U.S. and abroad. So I would say if you're interested, apply. You'll at the very minimum have an outcome on the application, and then as the State Department, you know, is looking toward the spring and looking toward, starting programs, you know, like the seminars that are supposed to be taking place that time of year, they'll be assessing very carefully the feasibility of holding those programs. I mean, all of the countries that we work with are very much concerned about this as well, and don't, you know, like the State Department, don't want to put anyone in like any undue risk. And we also realize that many institutions have put on travel restrictions for the summer and into the fall, and may well, you know, put them on for beyond that. So I think it's with much of Fulbright, you know, adaptability and flexibility are two key traits that help people be successful. And I would say that that very much is applicable to the application process and, you know, whether things will go on or not for sure this spring. I mean, we hope so, absolutely. We want things to be better around the world, don't get me wrong, but we aren't really fully able to predict or speak on behalf of the Department of State in terms of you know, definitive answers on that.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Catherine. Those are all the questions that we have now. What I would probably say is for anyone who has a burning question post-webinar, again, feel free to email me at iea@iie.org. But I do appreciate everyone for being on this call and expressing their interest. Catherine, do you have anything else you would like to add?
I don't think so. I mean, thank you again for taking time on a Friday afternoon. If you're joining us live, if you're joining us remotely, thank you for taking time. Hopefully we haven't put you to sleep. If we have, then maybe you can continue to use this for that benefit. but we hope that you are well and that you stay well and healthy, and we look forward to working with you and to seeing your application.
Take care, everyone.